turn a can into a cane? Who can turn a pan into a pane? It's not too hard to see, it's silent E. Who can turn a cub into a cube? Who can turn a tub into a tube? It's elementary for silent E. He took a pin and turned it into a pine. He took a twin and turned him into twine. Who can turn a cap into a cape? Who can turn a tap into a tape? A little blob becomes a globe instantly if you just add silent E. He turned a dam, alakazam, into a dame. But my friend Sam stayed just the same. Who can turn a man into a mane? Who can turn a van into a vein? A little hug becomes huge instantly. Don't add W, don't add X, and don't add Y or Z. Just add silent E.
Linoleum knife. What happened? I was so enchanted by that that I let the whole song play.
Yes.
Because yes. You chose it. I don't know why.
You were trying to punish me by playing it all the way through. I know how your mind works. You thought that somehow letting it run unfettered would shame me in some way, but I'm not ashamed.
I'm not trying to shame you.
The great Tom Lehrer.
I think it's a great song. I'm just confused.
I just thought it would be fun. And here's the fun
fact. You're right. It was. I was having fun.
Yes.
Remembering all the words. I know all the words to that song.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
I've seen that. It was a little animated thing, right?
On Electric Company.
On the Electric Company when we were kids. And I already knew about Silent E before then.
You were hooked on phonics.
I was super hooked on phonics.
And Ritalin.
At a very early age. No. I was drug free as a child.
So put the crack up.
And as an adult as well. Mm-hmm.
You're anti.
I'm not straight edge. I'm just, you know.
I'm just quoting.
I know what you're quoting. I understand what you're quoting.
I will. Here's the thing. Like, I'm sure that animated bit is on YouTube. I'll post it on our Facebook.
Almost every day in second grade, they would roll the TV in, and we would watch The Electric Company at like 11 o'clock or whenever it was on in the morning. Like, that was a thing that they made us. That was part of my
curriculum.
My second grade curriculum, part of that day.
Was watching The Electric Company. I took it as an elective, I guess.
Yeah. I went to public school. That's why. I didn't come up with Amy Carter as a classmate like some people I know.
Yeah.
So, but the thing was, is that I would just draw pictures during The Electric Company because I was bored by The Electric Company. I mean, I liked the songs and everything.
Right.
But it wasn't teaching me anything. Like, I was reading before I entered first grade on my own. Of my own volition.
Same here.
I wanted to read books. I actively sought them out. I wanted those little phonics activity books at the store. Like, I wanted them. Yeah. My parents bought those for me.
No, me too. I totally agree. So you were always ahead of Fargo, North Dakota, is what you're saying.
Completely, yes. And I remember looking around in second grade. It was one of the first sort of realizations I remember having where
you were smarter than the room.
You look around the room and you're like, some of these dummies don't know what they're looking at. Like, kids who would get their papers all screwed up, like, it'd come back, everything would be wrong on the turning cub into cube, for example. Uh-huh. And I think to myself, how come you can't just know that? Like, what's your deal? And I never had an answer. Just some people were just dumb.
Young Dave White going around saying,
duh.
You are Dave White, by the way.
With film, a silent E.
The silent E. A movie, film critic for movies.com.
Oh, and you're Alonzo Durrell Day of therap.com.
Yes.
And also What the Flick.
Yes.
And now we will tell you that this is a podcast about the current cinema. And that's my phone going off in the background because it's charging. And I
have a fun fact about
share it.
The Electric Company soundtrack album, which that ditty came from. You know how Rita Moreno is one of the very few people, and I think the only Hispanic, to have scored the EGOT, the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony? You're not even listening to me. You're looking at your phone.
She got the looking EGOT. At your phone. She got the EGOT.
Do you know where she got her Grammy?
For the Electric
Company. For the Electric Company soundtrack album.
For the punctuation song?
I suppose so. They are the little marks they used to
influence. She was the punctuation song lady.
To make a sentence make more sense.
Yeah. If you want to be a reading sensation, you've got to learn your punctuation. I know these songs.
She was.
I saw it every damn day.
She was the hey you guys.
But I should have been learning something else.
Yes, you were already reading at a fifth grade level, I'm sure, and you.
I don't know what grade level.
You were spending time with. Jennifer
I don't know what grade level I was
Spidey
reading.
Spidey Super Stories.
But I was reading.
Yes.
And I guess some kids in second grade weren't reading yet. Like they weren't. They didn't like it.
Well, that was.
Or they didn't. You know, I know there are adults who still don't like it.
That was why I, you know, I skipped a grade in school, and it was because. All the grades...
Because of the Electric Company?
Because of the Electric Company, exactly. No, I learned to read early. I think partially because of Sesame Street, but partially because of having older siblings and just being a weirdo.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I started pre-K, you know, I could read. And so they would always sort of give me, like, the more advanced reading stuff when I was, like, PK, K, first grade. Second grade, for some reason, I had this very doctrinaire teacher who decided that I was going to do what everybody else did by gum, whether I liked it or not.
Right.
And my parents were not having it, and so the next thing I knew...
Oh, you had those parents.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Next thing I knew, I was in third grade. Third grade with a May birthday, so I was super younger than everybody else in my class. That was a treat.
Smaller. Weaker. More innocent. More easily beaten up.
No.
I think that what this means about you and me is that we are better than a lot of people.
We are junior nerds is all.
We're better than almost everyone. If listeners, don't you think that we're better?
No, I think what it means, in my case, I think it means I peaked early.
What? Wait a second.
I think, like, when I was...
What version am I getting?
When I was five, I was so ahead of the game, and now I'm struggling to
and
keep
now
up.
You're, now you're a loser.
Now I'm Joe Average. Once you pass 30, you
how
really...
How come I... Wait a second.
Once you pass 30, you really can't be precocious anymore. That just doesn't...
Well, no,
that
doesn't you can't. Fly. You can't, but I'm beginning to think that you sold me a bill of goods in this relationship.
I'm as awesome...
Thought I was getting some top-notch man.
I'm as awesome as you think I am. I don't know how awesome you think that is,
oh,
but,
dang.
You know, I can't fool you.
Sometimes... No, you can. Sometimes... Occasionally, I'm fooled by...
You're foolable?
You pretend... You know, here's why. You're so good at doing math things in your head that I walk around going, look, he can do math things in his head.
That's because you can't do math things
I can't do anything.
Head, so you
I
think
can't
it's
do any number anything magic. In my head. Like, I can't even... I have numbers dyslexia. Like, I can't even tell what something costs.
Yeah.
Like, the 3 and the 8 are backwards.
So the fact that I can calculate a tip, you think it's like, how can he create fire without flint or tinder?
It's magic that you can do that, yeah.
No, it's nothing. That's not that special.
Why don't we talk about some movies?
Why don't we?
Because
yes, there are...
There's a lot of them, and you... Start with one that you saw that I didn't see. Let's get them out of the way, because they're little films. And honestly, who cares? And ultimately, I just want to get to talk about Paranoia.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all about Paranoia this week, which didn't even open in the top 10.
Oh, but in my heart. in my heart, Paranoia is the number one film of the week.
I see. All right, well, I will zip through the movies that I saw that you did not. Two of them premiered at Sundance this year. One of them is the comedy Austin Land, directed and co-written by Jerusha. Is that how you say her name?
No.
Jerusha Hess, who co-wrote Gentleman Broncos. And
I did not despise. I know that you did.
Hated it.
It's not a good movie.
I remember you coming home telling me
just that I was going to want to pull my hair out.
I found it genuinely despicable. Yeah. And I kind of feel the same way about Austin Land, frankly.
Yay.
It's based on a novel. It's about this sort of, it's basically about a kind of theme resort in England where people can go and pretend that they're living in the Regency. And it's really sort of designed for, you know, love-struck women to meet their own Peter, you know, Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy.
Are there any male tourists who go to this place?
Not in this movie. Not in the we see in the one visit that we get. That's never mentioned.
Weird.
Well, Stephanie Meyer produced this movie, executive produced this movie.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Oh, then it's,
so there's a
then
weird,
it's garbage.
The sexuality is very bizarre and in the way you would expect,
yeah.
You know. And I mean,
she's a freak.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with her. I'm serious.
And Jerusha Hess in Gentleman Broncos, which was, when it wasn't being homophobic, it was like you had Jennifer Coolidge playing this woman who was
Gentleman Broncos was homophobic.
Yes.
Why don't I remember any of that?
The whole thing of the Sam Rockwell is playing the character within the novel and in the version that winds up being published by Jermaine Clement. No. Was the other one?
No, it's Jermaine.
It's Jermaine. Yeah. Okay, yeah. The other one's in this one. Britt is in this one.
Right.
Jermaine's version of the book of the Gentleman Broncos thing. Yes. Remember, he's got the blonde hair and the mustache. He's like, oh, you know.
Oh, I just thought that was funny.
It was creepy. And then that's creepy, funny. And then Jennifer Coolidge was, you know, her character like made these sort of modest nightgowns for women. Like there was this weird unspoken Mormon subtext
always,
in the whole thing.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Religion just poisons everything.
Seriously. Especially comedies.
I honestly, like, and I'm not talking about being an atheist or not being an atheist or being having religion in your, you know, self or whatever. People are freaked out when they get super deep into that stuff.
It is more likely than not to mess up your art, I think, is a fair assumption.
Man. Unless you're Flannery O'Connor.
Yeah, or Michelangelo. You
know, right.
Anyway, so in this, okay, first of all, we're supposed to buy in Austin Land that Carrie Russell is mousy and plain.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah, sell me that one.
She's all that.
Right.
Syndrome.
Exactly.
Right.
Totally, totally. So she, after another terrible relationship, decides she's going to spend her life savings.
And I know there were movies before She's All That that propagated this lie, but
it's the handy one.
I use She's All That.
Absolutely.
That is my touchstone film.
Good heavens, Miss Takamoto, you're beautiful.
Because I will watch She's All That.
At the drop of a hat.
At the drop of a hat. On cable, anytime.
Kiss me under the milky twilight. Anyway, okay, so she goes to Austin Land where, you know, everybody's wearing ampere waists and, you know, a lot of time spent in sitting rooms. Of course, the joke is that because she scrounged together the money to go, she's on the copper package. So she's, like, staying in the servants' quarters, and the dresses and hair they give her is very sort of frumpy, like she's the poor relation. Whereas,
yeah, that means she gets to bang it out with the stable guys or whatever.
We're getting
Okay.
So Jennifer Coolidge is one of her fellow tourists who's like, you know, an idiot who's never read any Jane Austen,
right.
Doesn't know anything that's going on, but she's rich, so she gets the full pampering treatment. Here's the thing. I love Jennifer Coolidge.
Like, oh, yeah.
Jennifer Coolidge.
She's hilarious.
On stage doing improv is one of the funniest things I've ever witnessed in my life.
Yes.
And boy, does Jerusha Hess not know what to do with Jennifer Coolidge.
A pig giving a bunny a shampoo.
Exactly.
That's an inside joke between you and me, but it's a thing that Jennifer
when
Coolidge
she says it, it's
said
hysterical.
On stage one time, and I peed my pants.
No, seriously, I thought I was going to vomit. I was laughing so hard. In the films of Jerusha Hess, however, she ain't funny. Anyways, it's this whole thing where, you know, you've got the guys who work at this resort, and you know, as it goes along, you come to find out their job basically is to seduce these women who visit, you know, and give them the sort of dream romance. Which the movie never really ever explores the sort of pimpy undertone of the whole thing.
This is Deuce Bigelow kind of stuff.
Kind of, yeah. Although in my review I said, if we're going to do theme resorts, I wanted the Yul Brynner robot from Westworld to show up and get rid of all
these people.
I was fixing
to ask you, is animatronic Yul Brynner in this
Sadly,
movie?
No.
Dang.
May he rest in peace.
That's too bad.
But yeah, but so she winds up being torn between this guy, J.J. Field, who's playing the sort of Mr. Darcy guy, and then...
Oh, that's the name of the actor?
Yeah,
J.J. Have I seen him in something?
I don't know that I've seen him before. He's actually pretty good in this.
Okay.
But his name is spelled F-E-I-L-D, so I joked on Twitter. He now joins Liev Schreiber on the list of actors whose names Microsoft Word will always autocorrect.
Every time, I hate it when Liev Schreiber's in a movie because I cannot make
you can't teach
Word
it.
Or WordPress. When I'm writing my reviews in WordPress for movies.com,
yeah.
It will not accept his name.
Right.
And I have to do it over and over and over again to make it believe
it is not Liv.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, so this guy
change your name, Liev Schreiber. For my sanity's sake.
So Mr. F-E-I-L-D joins his ranks, and then Brett McKenzie plays the stable boy who acts like he's not one of the actor guys, but maybe then you find out maybe he is. Here's where apart from it being just super not funny, where it falls apart for me is that we're supposed to believe that the character played by Kerry Russell is super, super, super into Austin, like lifelong
and can't get,
Austin reader.
And can't get a man into her.
Well, leaving that part aside for the moment. But she talks about how she, when she was 13, she memorized the first 5 chapters of Pride and Prejudice. Sorry. Something like that. So she finally arrives in Austinland. It's like her dream. She gets to live in Regency England.
Yes.
And every other word out of her mouth is hi or okay.
That's what people say. That's English.
No, not in
oh,
that
do people
era.
Walk around this place speaking as though they
yes.
are in that? Oh, I see.
And so you would think that for her, because this was finally her...
She'd like, really be into it and using the...
Exactly.
How do you do? Good,
right.
Good evening.
Yes, she should be talking...
Good morrow.
She yeah. should be she should be talking like an Austin heroine, but she doesn't, and it just... So that's just a the tip of the iceberg. But
yes.
This movie is awful, and it's hilarious because my review on therap.com... Some lady posting under the name Latina Producer wrote this letter to my publisher saying that why do they send a man to review this one? Obviously, this is a chick flick and a woman mentality. Blah, 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 blah. I saw it with love.
You know
blah, blah, blah.
If you're a woman and you use the word chick flick,
yeah, you've already disqualified
yourself. You are Stephanie Meyer, probably. And or you have another horrible problem in your life because that is the grossest... genre
diminutive
slang designation. I despise it with everything that I am.
It drips with condescension.
And it fulfills itself as a prophecy. It makes it okay for Katherine Heigl
to work.
Keep doing the things that she's been doing to the world. And I want everyone, I want women and men to stop allowing this to happen. If you're not allowed to review a movie that is about a woman,
yeah,
then I want Latina Producer to write a letter to the New York Times and tell them that Manola can't review movies about guys.
No, I know, it's ridiculous. And I
let's all just segregate ourselves, and I will only now review Fatso starring Dom DeLuise.
That was directed by a woman, though.
And I don't care. It's about a Fatso. And I will also only review really crappy gay themed movies.
and
Valhalla Rising.
There you go. I went and looked at Rotten Tomatoes, and Ella Taylor, our friend, hates Austin Land.
Well, yeah.
Susan Vla, I can never pronounce her last name. It's a whole lot of Polish lettering going on.
Yes.
She's right for USA Today, now she writes for Ebert.com. Yes. She didn't like it. A lot of women on Rotten Tomatoes were panning this movie. So I thought, this is not, don't try and make this about my penis. You know, I am completely capable of reviewing films that are directed by or aimed at women.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just anyway, Austin Land is terrible. Don't go see it.
Good defense of yourself.
Thank you.
There.
I felt it needed to be said.
Yes.
Also out this week that premiered at Sundance this year is Ain't Them Bodies Saints.
I have not seen that yet.
Is that an expression? Is that a thing anybody says? Ain't Them Bodies Saints?
I grew up
Because I've heard a lot of corn pone in my day.
I grew up among a variety of hicks and drunkards.
And hill people.
Hill people. And ex-cons and hee-haw fans.
Uh-huh. Do you know this phrase?
And I've never heard this expression before. All right.
Just wondering. All right, so it's shot in Texas. It's written and directed by this guy, David Lowery, who is everywhere lately.
Yes.
He edited Upstream Color.
And he is not the guy from Camper Van Beethoven and Cracker.
No, he is not.
He's a different one.
Different David Lowery.
Yes.
I
knew that. I just
you want to clarify.
Clarify that, yes.
Yeah, he edited Upstream Color, which is one of our favorite movies this year. He co-wrote Pit Stop, which was at Sundance, and which we just had at Outfest as our U.S. Centerpiece Gala. And this is basically a kind of an amour fou movie, I guess. It starts out with Rooney.
That's French.
Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck. You know, yes. They're young and they're in love, and she's pregnant, and he does crimes, and she sort of joins him. And at one point, they wind up kind of stuck. They're trapped in this house, and the cops are shooting at them, and they're shooting at the cops. She shoots a sheriff in the shoulder. Who's played by Ben Foster. As the shoulder, as the sheriff, and then, but
with Ben Foster as the shoulder.
It's about these elbows, see. But Casey Affleck takes the blame for the shooting, so he goes off to jail. She winds up staying in this small town, raising their kid under their
crime child.
Their crime child under the occasional supervision of Keith Carradine, who is Ben Affleck or Casey Affleck's adoptive father.
That's a guy you want babysitting your kid.
So then Casey Affleck busts out of the joint, and he's obviously heading back to his beloved. So everybody's got their eye on her, including Sheriff Ben Foster, who winds up kind of hitting it off with her and with the kid. And it seems like, you know, she sort of realizes that Affleck's never going to get to her because everybody's looking for him. And she sort of starts falling for Ben Foster. This is a really attractive-looking film. It was the DP that did Pariah and Middle of Nowhere.
Yeah.
But I lost interest in the plot. And it just, to me, it was...
Did you know?
Yeah, and This is a textbook kind of movie that you're likely to like more than I do. So I'll be curious to hear what you think if
it's
you ever see it.
It's getting really good reviews.
It is getting really good reviews, but I've also talked to a lot of critics. The ones that were at the screening with me.
Name them.
Bob Strauss from the LA Daily News.
Respectable.
Betsy Sharkey from the LA Times. And Gene Oppenheimer, our friend. And,
yes.
And Henry
Sheehan.
Gave you figs this week. And Henry Sheehan. We were all sitting together. Not Bob Strauss, but the other three.
Can I just tell you how good those figs were?
Well, I'm glad you liked them.
They're so... I mean, she gave me an egg carton full of them.
Uh-huh.
And they were bursting.
They were hell's a popping.
So ripe. They were splitting at their fig seams. And in fact, some of them had burst so much that I had to toss them out. Like they were overripe.
Mm-hmm.
But the last half dozen that were still okay and intact,
uh-huh,
I just ripped them open and ate them like an In Excess video.
Do we have to watch Women in Love again so that Alan Bates can explain to you how to open a fig?
I don't care how Alan Bates opens a fig. And I know the... Yes, old people. I know the In Excess video was based on Tom Jones. Shut up.
Yeah, we were going to get a lot of cards and letters.
Look, someone out there was going to say, you know... It always happens. You make any kind of goof, and someone's got to correct your ass about it.
Anyway, ain't the body saying
such good figs?
Well,
really,
that's right.
So sweet and delicious.
Not a fan, but I'm glad.
If you have a fig tree, I would enjoy more of them. If you're local, Jean, if you're listening, I know she's not.
Probably not. Right. Anyway, the cluster of critics I was sitting with afterwards, we were all kind of, well, that was really gorgeous.
They have a lot of magnesium.
That's good.
Figs do. That's a nice mineral. They're naturally full of magnesium and fiber.
Anyway, I there's a lot about Anthem Body Saints that I liked, but ultimately it kind of turned me off just because I didn't think there was enough story to maintain its running time. It was the kind of movie that I thought...
I don't really believe anything you're telling
me. It's too bad there's no such thing as like a 50-minute movie. Like there's no market for that.
I think that...
Look, fine.
Everything you're saying is probably wrong.
Go see
it. I mean, I haven't seen this movie yet, but I'm just going to guess that you are wrong.
Go see about it. This buy a second ticket for your purse. You know, they do. Really support the film.
They do mean, they do make, well, when I saw that Bresson retrospective, the Trial of Joan of Arc is like 65 minutes long.
Right. Well, you know, yeah. I'm talking about in American mainstream filmmaking.
The Kevin Hart movie was about 65 minutes long, too.
That was a whole other thing. Anyway, so there was a lot that I liked about the film. It ultimately didn't all work for me, but I love the way that it looked. I'm curious to see what this guy does next, because clearly he is an important figure in the independent cinema
right now.
He's a comer.
He's coming up.
This is his second feature, apparently.
Did we see the first one?
I don't think so. I don't think it got much play.
I saw the first one.
I don't remember the name of it now. I looked it up on IMDb. But you know, I love Upstream Color, and I loved Pit Stop. I only like, and even like with reservations, Ain't Them Body Saints. But, you know, that's that. And
all right, we have four more.
No. What? There's a third one that I saw that you haven't seen.
Oh, dude, what is it?
I'll do it real quick. The Happy Sad, which is the new
make
film.
Make it fast.
It's the new film from Rodney Evans, who directed Brother to Brother, which I included in my book, 101 Must-See Movies for Gay Men.
101 Must-See Movies for Gay Men.
And whereas that film was mostly a period piece about the Harlem Renaissance, although it partially took place in the modern day, this one is very
Anthony Mackie is in it.
Yes, yes. Yeah. He plays a contemporary student who finds himself inspired by the Harlem Renaissance.
Yes.
This one is about two couples, one African-American and one white, one gay, one straight, and there's a lot of fluidity and interplay between the two as they sort of test the boundaries of
smooching across the genders.
Much smooching, yes, and races. They test the confines of their relationship, they test their own sexualities. I think it's a really smart
pop quizzes.
Yay!
That's jokes.
If you do it right, I think it's a really smart movie. It's a really sexy movie, and you know, it's provocative in the good way. In terms of it really sort of.
Oh, so this is actually a good movie.
It is a good movie. Yeah, it's
you've
based
seen so many more films than I have this week.
It's based on a play, and there are times that you can tell it's based on a play.
I see.
But for the most part, I found it really interesting, and you don't really know where it's going to go or what it's going to say about, you know, I think it tackles the idea of sexuality in a much more mature way than we're used to seeing in a lot of American movies.
In any movie.
In any, yeah. You know, a lot of, usually American movies in dealing with anything that's beyond sort of, you know, heteronormative monogamy. It's freak out time!
I know.
And I think this handles it really well. The performances are all really good. So it's probably getting a rather tiny release and making its way slowly around the country. Before
Did it open in Los Angeles this week?
I think it might be playing in New York as well. But anyway,
great. The rest of you can go F yourselves.
it will either open in your town or play at your local gay lesbian film festival or be on DVD one of these days. So anyway, The Happy Sad, I think it's really good. I think people should check it out.
Jobs.
Okay.
Jobs. Jobs.
As James Franco says, I like Jobs.
Jobs. Steve Jobs. Here's what I didn't know about Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm. Didn't like shoes.
Anything, first of all. I didn't know anything about Steve Jobs. I knew that he made the computer.
Yes.
I knew.
He and Ada Lovelace invented the computer.
I knew that he invented the computer, and I knew that he invented my laptop and my iPod. And I also know nothing else about him. And then I saw this movie. Mm-hmm. Also, I knew he was dead.
Yes.
I remember when he died and everyone was very sad about his death.
Right.
All I remember thinking when he died was, oh, that's sad. You know, like he had, what, cancer? Something
yes,
like that? Exactly. Okay, he had cancer and that was very sad. But I didn't know what kind of man he was. But now that I've watched Jobs, I know that he was a dick.
Can we say that in a clean podcast?
Can we say that? They say it on TV. Hasn't that always been our rule? If you say it on TV, you can say it on our clean podcast, right?
Well, TVMA?
I will tell you. No, this was before TVMA. I remember the very first time I heard the word dick on a TV show, getting back to Kerry Russell. It was used on Felicity.
Really?
In the 90s.
Okay, well then yeah. I'll accept
so
it.
So it's, I would argue that I can call the character of Steve Jobs, as portrayed by Ashton Kutcher in the film Jobs, to be a dick.
Fine.
With some bare feet that the camera really lingered over quite a bit, like a real Quentin Tarantino kind of thing.
Luis Buñuel.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And like they were always showing shots of his sneakers or his sandals or his bare feet or the bottom, the soles of his feet. And I'm like, wait a second.
Dirty porn feet.
If you are walking around with no shoes on half the time, your feet are not going to look all Ashton Kutcher sparkly clean. They're going to look dirty.
Yeah.
But he constantly had these clean, clean feet. So pretty.
And you're going to have trichinosis.
Yeah. Also that. You're going to get a ringworm walking around like that. But very mean to everyone, yelling at people, firing them for asking a question. Deadbeat dad didn't want to take care of his own kids. Two. By right, the end of the movie,
but there's only one.
Two anonymous children and only, an anonymous wife by the end of the film.
But there's only one that he denied paternity of.
Well, and so...
it's like between, when he was in the delivery room going, that was not mine. I got nothing to do with this.
In between being mean to everyone...
And stealing Steve Wozniak's ideas.
And stealing Steve Wozniak's ideas, played by Josh Gad.
Who's the best thing in the
movie. Who's the best thing in the movie. Who is just the heart and soul of this film. Like, if there had been a Woz movie and starring him, I would be telling you an entirely different story right now.
Right.
I know nothing more about Steve Jobs now than I did before going in, other than that he was not a nice person.
Yeah, it's a really disappointing biopic. And not just that they don't tell you much about him, they don't give you enough historical context to explain why
that's where I was going
he
next.
Mattered.
Can,
I mean,
you can say that.
There was a... I always remember... I can't remember who said this, but it might have been Matt Seitz, but somebody had a great review of Chaplin when it came out, where they said, watching this movie, you would never you'd never realize that the person that it's about changed the medium that you're watching.
Yes.
You know, and you don't ever walk away with what Jobs did that was so
for
great.
A job.
Yeah. he's not on a bubblegum card. What did Steve Jobs do that was so great? I mean, seriously, if you don't walk in knowing how the home computer changed the world and how Apple computers changed the home computer, you're not going to get that from this movie.
I am that person.
Yes,
in the audience.
Tell them the actual conversation we had.
Before the internet, what were people using computers for? I did not own a computer until 1997?
Six. We bought one in 1996.
I don't know that that's true. I think it's 97.
Remember, no, I bought it the week you moved in with me.
Oh, did I?
Remember? And you were like, oh, great, you're never going to talk to me now.
Well, yeah. and the internet had just kind of started.
Ish. We were late on the internet.
Yeah, well, who cares? Anyway... I had never touched one until then. I was not one of those early users, and even before the early, you know, people using it in the early 90s with the proto internet that was happening all through the 80s. If you had one in the 80s, what in the hell did you do with it? Was it just an expensive typewriter? The movie never tells me anything about this. They're just like, oh, the Apple IIe is selling very well, and this other one is like a disaster, and the people don't want to buy that. And I'm like, what are the people doing with the computer? I didn't do anything with the computer all through the 80s. Nothing.
Well, when I shared an apartment with former guest of the show, Robert Abley, he had one, the pre-internet, and I used it as a word processor. And I
waste of money.
And I played a lot of solitaire on it.
Also waste of money.
But yeah, I did not own a computer until 1996 when we bought a compact Presario, and that was our key to the information superhighway.
That's right.
But yeah, I apart from like playing video games and word processing, I have no idea what people did with computers for the internet, and I'm sure people listening to the show know, but the movie doesn't tell us that.
When I had to turn in a paper for school in college, I borrowed a friend's typewriter. Oh. I didn't even own a typewriter. I borrowed a friend's typewriter.
I used the computers at the college newspaper office.
And, you know, to do the research, I would go to the library.
The big, giant computers that were like the keyboard was attached to the screen, and it was one big... Yeah. Plastic that you could barely lift because it was so heavy, and it had Word Star.
And the people who had the little Apple IIe still had to go to the library, just like me.
Yeah, because there was not an internet yet.
No. So, I But this film gives you nothing.
No.
This film gives you
nothing. We're supposed
nothing.
To take it on faith that he was this visionary genius because he dropped acid once and waved his arms around in a field while, like, Beethoven plays or something.
My favorite scene. It was my favorite scene in the movie.
In the canon of stupid acid trip scenes in movies, it definitely ranks among the silliest. And
Ashton Kutcher is sadly very terrible as this man. He gets a few of the personal ticks down.
He gets the weird lope.
But I don't get visionary genius from Ashton Kutcher. You know, he's a fine comic actor. I've seen him do funny things.
Yeah, he has his strengths.
In television and movies. However, when he is trying to be an angry genius, he just sneers like a petulant Abercrombie and Fitch model. And that is what he's good at.
What bugged
and
me
it,
was...
And it makes me crazy to think that 10 years ago, he starred in My Boss's Daughter with Tara Reid. And he's still headlining films, and she's in Sharknado, when she's so great. I love Tara Reid.
You watched every episode of Tara Dice.
I watched every episode of Tara Dice. It was amazing.
What were you talking about? His performance, you can catch him acting all the time because there's certain scenes where he's doing vowels the way that Steve Jobs would say them. Like, you can tell he's doing this voice, but he doesn't do it in every scene. So you notice when it comes and when it goes. And so that noticing allows you to go, oh, yes, it's Ashton Kutcher acting.
There's a series of boardroom meetings in this film. Those are enthralling.
And you can tell they were like, okay, we've got Ashton Kutcher in the lead. We need to bolster this guy with get me the best second bananas money can buy. Because this movie has, you know, J.K. Simmons and Dermot Mulroney and Matthew Modine and Leslie Ann Warren and Josh Gad and like all these amazing character actors doing, yes, these super dullo scenes about corporate buyouts.
It's so terrible. And not in a way that's fun. It's just boring and makes you fidget. And
it is both too long and at the same time not rushes enough. Through everything.
I wish I knew more about Steve Jobs. Like, you know, by the end of the film, although I came away with this, he made an iPod and he wore mom jeans and he was not nice. the end.
Well, Aaron Sorkin is writing his own Jobs movie, and Wozniak is consulting on it.
Good.
So that one, I suspect, because, again, you watch The Social Network, and even if you've never been on Facebook, the movie explains to you what the world was like before Facebook, why Facebook was such a BFD, how it changed things, how it changed the internet, how it changed the way people relate to each other, blah, 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 blah. None of that in Jobs.
Right.
None.
Right.
All right. Lee Daniels, the butler.
This is actually the highest quality film that we have on tap this week.
It is.
Yes. And it is not about the butler that you think it's about. That butler's name was Eugene Allen.
Oh, I thought you said it's not about Alfred.
No. There was a butler named Eugene Allen. He served from Eisenhower through... Reagan? Yeah. I think through Reagan.
The one in the movie does.
Yeah. And here his name is Cecil Gaines. And the reason they call him Cecil Gaines in the movie is so they can...
change everything.
Play fast and loose with every single thing about this man's life. They seriously take the template of this guy's life and create an entirely fictional world around it.
Which is fine.
And that's fine. I'm not... The movie, don't go to this movie thinking you're getting a biopic of this guy in his real life.
Right. Well, they're using the existence of this guy.
That's what I'm getting.
Yeah, as a way to tell a story about the civil rights movement.
Yes. So, if you are, going in, you need to know that it's a fictional film.
It's as based on a true story as any horror film that begins with based on a true story.
Yes. And also, you need to know, nothing about the Civil Rights Movement because it will tell you all the flashcard highlights. If you did pay any attention in history class, then you will not be surprised by anything that happens in this movie.
Which is not to say that it isn't told compellingly.
But it's told very well, and it's directed in a way that is, by Lee Daniels, that only occasionally touches on his propensity for
crazy town,
buck wild craziness and pathology and nasty stuff. He's an interesting cat because you give him no rules. You just say, do what you want, and he makes the paperboy. Which, if you have not seen the paperboy, please watch the paperboy. Also, Shadowboxer.
Oh, man.
That's before Precious. Yeah. Cuba Gooding Jr. and Helen Mirren.
As lovers.
A little more than lovers.
Lovers who are related by
marriage. I don't know. I'm kind of torn, really. Do I prefer
unhinged.
Do I prefer unhinged Lee Daniels, or do I prefer, as you called him earlier this week, for your consideration, Lee Daniels?
I think there are things to like about both. I think he is a canny filmmaker. I think he's very shrewd about what he's trying to do.
Yeah,
whether that thing is win awards or go crazy.
Yeah.
Even when I don't like, I'm not as big a fan of the Paperboy as you are, but I'm certainly never bored by him.
There is not one boring moment in the Paperboy. The Paperboy never ceases to stun and amaze.
The Paperboy gets so loony that it needs to get loonier. Like it doesn't go far enough.
Plenty.
There are moments plenty. Where it goes beyond the pale, but
yes,
I think
sir.
But given that it wants to live beyond the pale, it needs to just go up there and stay.
Maybe you have a point.
But the butler, I think, is for what it is, a really interesting film. And they basically turn, they give the real butler had one son, this movie gives him two. And in this film, the older son is played by David Oyelowo from like 17 to 60 or something crazy that. Like you see him graduate from high school and you see him as an old man
right.
when Obama gets elected.
And Oprah starts the movie as a 50-year-old, 20-something-year-old woman. I don't know how old she's supposed to be. Not one thing about her face changes through the entire film.
Oprah don't crack.
Her hair gets a little grayer. Mm. That's it.
Like, true, yeah. But she ages more brutally in The Color Purple, but then, she just gets hit in the face and all.
Right.
Anyway, the older son, the David Oyelowo character, it's kind of the Forrest Gump in this movie where he is just always in the place.
He's in the,
Wherever it's happening,
he's a freedom rider, he's a Black Panther, he's a congressman.
He's there when JFK gets assassinated. He's chaining himself to the South African embassy. I mean, he's just always on it.
And he's the fictional son.
Yes.
In the movie.
Yeah. But he's really good. I really liked his performance in, again, Middle of Nowhere.
So is Forrest Whitaker, although it's a very quiet performance.
Yeah, Whitaker has the challenge of playing a character because he is a domestic, plays a character who essentially has to live his life disappearing as much as he can.
Yes.
And that's a really tough thing for an actor to pull off without doing it himself.
Yes.
And so I think Whitaker gives this great, is a great performance because that could have just been boring.
Yes.
He could have just sort of been nothing instead of conveying the idea of nothingness.
Yes.
But he's
terrific.
No, he's terrific. He's really compelling to watch. What's less interesting in this movie, but even though it's the selling point, is the sort of parade of celebrity cameos as the presidents
and their wives
Yeah. Except for Jane Fonda as Nancy Reagan, that was pretty great.
But
everybody else, I mean, nobody's embarrassing. I mean, Robin Williams is fine as Eisenhower. James Marsden is a decent Kennedy, as Christy Lemire pointed out, at least he doesn't do the full Mayor Quimby accent.
Right.
Liev Typo Schreiber is LBJ. John Cusack is
on the toilet.
Yeah, which is what LBJ would do. He would have meetings like that. Cusack is Nixon. They skip Carter and Ford and Carter for some reason, and then Alan Rickman as Reagan.
Yeah.
They're fine. They don't really add much. It's just sort of interesting window dressing.
Yeah.
First fun Cuba Gooding Jr. performance
in a very long time.
And another nice supporting bit from Lenny Kravitz, who's turning into this really good character.
My favorite person in this movie is Oprah.
Well,
she gets all the great outfits.
True. If you ever want to see Oprah dancing to Soul Train in a like a black and white
the giant off the shoulder Afro
jumpsuit
wig.
and hoop earrings, this is the movie for you.
She gets to do everything that real life Oprah only does when the cameras aren't on her.
If then.
Smoke, drink, fornicate.
Use the N-word.
Adultery. She says the N-word in this movie. And this is a woman who has publicly scolded other black celebrities for using this word.
Yeah.
But when you're an actor, you can do whatever you want.
Character.
So she says it. And she hits a kid, smacks a child, calls one little girl ugly.
She is a terrible smoker, I have to say. Like, you know none of that is going anywhere near her lung. She sort of kind of puffs around it and blows it out, and you know.
It is a fun performance from her.
It is.
And it totally makes me forget that she just tried to buy a $40,000 purse.
And we're supposed to feel sorry for her.
Yeah.
They wouldn't show it to her. Oh, the inhumanity! No, I mean, there's two sides on that one, obviously, but really, it's a $35,000 purse.
That story's made up.
Apparently, yes. I think
that story is made up.
At least the clerk says so.
So coincidental that there's a movie coming out that she has to be in the press. And she has to make herself news to promote this movie. Boom. Here I am in Switzerland.
I'm going
to
suffer more ignominy at a shop.
What got me a lot of press? Oh, the Hermes thing. We'll do that again. Somebody cook up a story. Obviously... I have no proof that it's made up.
Well, the capper being that...
But in my gut...
These were the
purchases... The minute it happened in my gut, I was thinking, your movie opens next week.
How convenient.
How interesting.
The capper of this is that these are the purchases from the Jennifer Aniston line.
No. Tom Ford.
Oh, okay.
Jennifer Aniston purse from Tom Ford.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like he's not going to send her one anyway.
Oh, he will now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even before, I'm sure he'd be like... Tom, send me one of them Jennifer Aniston. Got it the next day, FedEx.
Maybe they don't know each other. Maybe she's not hooked up on the Gucci gravy train.
Oh, I bet. Please. She shows up at the end of, what was that Karl Lagerfeld miniseries that we watched? Chanel.
Signe Chanel. Oh, God. You guys.
We've talked about this before.
Have we?
We have.
Watch Signe Chanel.
They've never put it out on DVD in the U.S., unfortunately.
If you can find it, it's so rad.
The Butler.
This is a good movie.
Yeah.
It's
a little hokey. There are moments where you can tell they're going for Oscar clip, you know, and
I'm not overly excited by it because I know what it is and I know what it's doing. And
but as has been pointed out, and I think is a totally valid point of view.
You're going to say what I was about to say, but go.
No, do what you say.
Do it.
It is a movie about racism that stars black people.
And black people are telling the story.
Yes. There are no white people who learn things.
No white folks who are like, let me help you.
Yeah. So, oh my God, that's terrible.
I finally understand racism. I'm going to go help all these folks over here. Listen, everybody. I get what's happening to you now. I totally understand everything you're going through. Let me fix it. I know you don't have any wherewithal of your own, and this whole civil rights movement needs people like me to kick it up a notch.
Well, and
legitimacy.
As somebody pointed out...
How about I be your Moses?
The idea that white audiences needed to have that surrogate character to get in to be invested
Mississippi
in
Burning. Oh, even better.
Thanks, FBI.
Thank you.
You really helped civil rights.
Thanks for all the help with the civil rights movement, Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Yes, J. Edgar Hoover.
Under J. Edgar Hoover.
Right on, fella.
Please. So, yes. That makes this movie revolutionary.
Yes. Even if the writer was white.
It doesn't matter.
No, the cast is black and the characters are black and it's their story and they're telling it. It's written by Danny Strong, who wrote Game Change and Recount for HBO, and yes. I think is you know, I call it popcorn politics. I think he's very good at taking big sort of historical moments and kind of boiling them down to human size.
And it co-stars Yaya from America's Next Top Model.
Yes.
In what is probably now her largest, her biggest role to date.
Yeah.
After The Kids Are All Right.
Respeto, people. it's great because...
She was Mark Ruffalo's girlfriend in The Kids Are All Right.
Right. And she popped up in Tron, but only briefly. Yes. There's a great moment where David Oyelowo comes home for the first time in years and brings her along, and they show up all Black Panther power to the people. She's got the big afro and the hoop earrings, and Oprah just thinks she's trash. And then, like, 2-3 years later, Oprah's wearing the same outfit.
and dancing.
And that is how fashion works.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
Kick-Ass 2. Yeah. Yeah. It's a soul-sucking movie.
A very confusing... Let me say this. Let me start that sentence over again. A movie that is confused about... Yes. First, a movie that is confused about itself. A movie that does not know what it wants to be. A movie that is a sequel that no one was excited to have, that acts like a reboot because nobody saw the first movie. So you find yourself learning all about Kick-Ass again, stuff you knew. You can find yourself learning all about Hit Girl again, stuff you knew. You don't learn much about Nicolas Cage because he was in the first movie.
And died.
So what you get now is Jim Carrey as the single most fascinating character in the film, a born-again Christian vigilante.
Former mob enforcer.
That feels like a character so friction-y and possibly problematic that they got scared of that character and sidelined it.
Mm.
And didn't go down any of those roads like they could have. Because think about that. As a character in a mainstream film.
Yeah, it's rare you get a born-again Christian in a movie that the movie isn't rolling its eyes at.
Yeah. And this guy's one of the heroes. And the film has absolutely no idea what to do with him.
Yeah.
The plot is essentially the same. They're fighting Christopher Mintz Plasse. Only he has now changed his name.
To something we cannot say in a clean podcast.
Yeah, a 12-letter word that we cannot say on this podcast. That's his new name. He was Red Mist in the first film, but now he's the MF-er.
Yes.
And
Matthew Vaughn is not directing.
And they fight. That's it. There's a lot of fighting, but there's not enough fighting, and it's not enough. It's not good enough fighting.
No.
It becomes very brutally violent.
Yes.
And it doesn't know what to do with that brutal violence either. It doesn't know whether it's supposed to commit to the brutal violence, if it's supposed to be a commentary on vigilantism, if it's a satire of superhero nonsense, you know, that we're engulfed in now.
A celebration? Doesn't know.
Is it a boy finds himself kind of story? Is it a girl finds herself kind of story? We have no idea.
Yeah, it's all over the map.
Because the movie has no idea. And that's super disappointing because I enjoyed...
Yeah, the first one was fun.
The first film.
The first one felt like I dug up my review and I can't really find it because it was on Queersided, but the shred of it I was able to find on Google, you know, or on Rotten Tomatoes, I said that it seemed the sort of purest distillation of adolescent male power fantasies I'd ever seen in a film. And this movie just feels like it was made by a power mad adolescent, and it just throwing all these things out that they thought we wanted to see.
I'm bored talking about this film. We have to talk about Paranoia.
Fine, let's talk about Paranoia.
I am. I was given production notes at the screening of Paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
Here they are. The high-stakes thriller Paranoia goes deep behind the scenes of global success to a deadly world of greed and deception. The two most powerful tech billionaires in the world, Harrison Ford and Gary Oldman, are bitter rivals with a complicated past who will stop at nothing to destroy each other. A young superstar, Adam Cassidy, Liam Hemsworth, seduced by unlimited wealth and power, falls between them and becomes trapped in their twisting, turning, life-and-death game of corporate espionage. By the time Adam realizes his life is in danger, he is in far too deep and knows far too much for them to let him walk away.
that movie sounded like it would have been interesting. I wish they'd made that one. Oi!
I had a really good time at this film. Now,
You saw it with critics. I was stuck at the premiere with some small children behind me who were like
I saw it with some critics and an extremely enthusiastic audience.
I saw it with people who clapped for every company name in the opening credits.
Yes. So, you know. That's always fun.
Yeah.
Those people are great to have see a movie with.
Woo, Deutschlander Bank!
I work for the insurance bonding company! Hooray! I think... Well, first of all, my review is not up yet at movies.com. It's still in the pipeline. I finished it on Thursday.
If you've ever wanted to
see, somehow did not get through to the posting station on Friday. It's waiting to go up. What were you going to say
I was going to say, if you ever wanted to see a shirtless Ben Mankiewicz, make sure you watch the What the Flick review of Paranoia. He goes there for some reason. Because Liam Hemsworth spends a good third of the movie.
Mostly not wearing a shirt in this film.
It's one of the few upsides of this movie.
Because no one has read my review yet on movies.com, I will tell you that in my review, I declare that this is the best Ryan Phillippe movie of 2001 of 2013.
Did you ever figure out what that movie was called?
Antitrust. Antitrust.
That's right. With a peanut allergy.
Yes. I want to tell you, first of all, that Antitrust is hilarious. And maybe someday you should look at it.
There's a double feature with Paranoia.
There's no hurry. Maybe, yes. First of all, if you're going to see Paranoia in a theater, you better do it the minute you finish listening to this podcast. Because it's Sunday afternoon as we record this, and the box office results are already in for the weekend. And this movie did not even make the top 10, even though it was released on 2,500 to 3,000 screens.
Yeah, we calculated that it had a less than $1,500 per screen average.
Which
if you calculate that the movies show 15 times over the course of a weekend and the average movie ticket is $10, that puts you at about 6 or 7 people per screening.
Because the average movie ticket in Los Angeles is now somewhere upwards of $15. Right. And in other cities, it's 7 or 8.
Sure.
Yeah. So
this movie's dying on the vine.
It's not long for theaters, and you don't have to see it in a theater.
No.
Or
at all, really.
It is truly... I laughed almost entirely, almost the whole way through the movie. I was having a really good time with its badness.
What movie do you think understands cell phones less, this one or Brian De Palma's Passion?
Jobs.
Touché.
We haven't gotten to Passion yet.
Well, Bibbs and
Passion,
I talked about it.
Passion doesn't open for another couple weeks.
Next
week.
It opens the 30th.
Last weekend of the month.
Yeah.
I've already seen Passion.
Yes. Bibbs and I talked about it.
Ooh, it's so fun.
We'll talk about it again when it opens.
Fun in the way that Paranoia is fun.
In that it stinks.
It's not fun in the way Paranoia is fun. Paranoia genuinely stinks. But as a corporate intrigue espionage movie, it is the Tyler Perry's Temptation Confessions of a Marriage Counselor of Ryan Phillippe movies of 2001 of 2013. How's that? That's what I'm trying to tell you that you should watch this movie. Here's my favorite part, and nothing is a spoiler here because
who cares?
Because who cares? My favorite part is when Liam Hemsworth is trying to get down with Amber Heard so that he can corporately espionage her.
Right.
And get all her secrets via downloading her entire laptop while she's in the shower.
Yes.
After they bang.
On a USB stick.
And he also has to get her thumbprint to get her access into the vault of Harrison Ford's big company. She leaves the most... three-dimensional, mucousy thumbprint on a spoon that I have ever, like, the dirtiest woman in film history.
Like she just did the pottery wheel scene from Ghost.
It's like she has, like, boogers and jam and...
Or she's a Ghostbuster.
And maple syrup and I don't know, fecal matter. Like, I don't know what is
on... An orange juice loogie.
Her thumb is so nasty. Like, the camera closes up on this spoon, and she's left a thumbprint on the handle, and it's like... Yeah.
Like when her thumb leaves the spoon, it should have made a... sound.
And no one ever talks about this as a thing. Like, does she not wash?
After they have sex, he should have handprints all over him. Yeah. My favorite part is when the FBI guy comes and realizes that Liam Hemsworth is playing a dangerous game.
Yeah.
And tries to scare him into turning state's evidence or whatever. And he shows him all these pictures of people that he's worked with at the Gary Oldman Company who have been murdered mysteriously.
Yeah.
And then they are never mentioned again for the rest of the movie.
You know, let dead dogs die.
Nobody talks about why they died, who they were, what's going on. Dead people pictures, and then
one of them was Liam Hemsworth's old co-worker.
Yes,
they show him the picture, and he's like, "Oh, too bad."
Yeah,
like,
and then literally,
bummer. That dude's murdered. That
sucks. Never mentioned. Nothing to do with the plot at all. This is directed by Robert Luketic,
who recently decided to follow you on Twitter.
Yes,
he is your Twitter follower. Well, isn't that fascinating that he started following you on Twitter like 2 or 3 weeks ago before his film came out?
If he read my
guess, what? You're being watched. Are you feeling paranoid?
There we go. That's very meta.
Robert Luketic is paranoia-ing you right now.
Well, if he read my review, he has a sad, because this is a guy...
No. He has a sad for a whole lot of other reasons right now. Because there's... Who liked this movie? Pete Hammond, the man who called you a pseudo-critic? Yeah. Thanks.
He basically has directed the Oogie Loves of industrial espionage movies.
Thank you.
There's a guy who, you know, he directed Legally Blonde. It's like, oh, hot new director. He's got a hit under his arm. What's he going to do next?
Nothing good for the rest of his career.
And everything
he's done
since then has been Monster-in-Law and 21 and Killers and The Ugly Truth, which is one of the worst movies
of all time.
So.
I wonder if he'll dump you as a Twitter pal, though, now.
I'll have to look and see if he's still
following
you. After
he's done paranoia-ing you.
Right.
Will he dump you? Will you stay Twitter friends?
Maybe
you'll win him over.
Maybe like...
I know your Twitter pals with Nia Vardalos. She loves you.
Maybe like the FBI pictures, I will never be thought
of
again.
You actually have like half a dozen celebrities following you on Twitter, and they all think you're the jinkiest. Like, they super adore you. They'll retweet you, and you get like 100 new people, and it's crazy.
There's only a couple.
To watch your Twitter career blow up because of all your fancy, famous Twitter friends.
Look, I apparently...
I had one famous Twitter person follow me. A week later, he dumped me.
Well, you weren't delivering.
I was super sad, too. He's not famous at all.
I have a
really esteemed art critic that I worship, and... Yeah. I wasn't good enough for him.
Your tweets were not up to snuff.
My tweets were not great.
Nia Vardalos and I have a Twitter relationship. But no, the super random one is that I made Eliza Dushku laugh apparently, and so she started following me.
Faith from Buffy.
Yeah, and so
your tweets are great.
So every so often she'll retweet me, and yeah, I get new followers. So it's like, thanks, Eliza Dushku. I appreciate it. We met once at Sundance. Because I read in her Twitter that she was in the same place that I was, and
you're like, hey, I'm here too. Let's meet in IRL.
Yes, and she said, come find me, and I did. She was lovely.
What if now
she's paranoying me?
I'm still fascinated by the Robert Luketic situation. Like, what if now henchmen begin showing up? At our door.
Well, that's why I never use the location feature on Twitter.
Oh, good. Smart thinking.
No one's going to paranoia me. Not having it.
Watch out, Robert Luketic. We will be paranoiaing you.
Yeah.
No, we won't.
No.
I don't even know what he looks like.
I have no idea.
He lives here. Obviously, he lives in our city.
I guess so,
We perhaps even sat next to him at a diner or somewhere.
That's true. It, if you don't know what somebody looks like, they can stalk you real easy.
Oh, God, he could paranoia us.
He could have been sitting behind us at
please,
it's always fair weather.
Look, Robert Luketic, if you're listening, please do not paranoia us. I, although gave your film 0 stars, I firmly believe it to be enchanting entertainment. I am recommending that people go see this movie because it's that ridiculous.
We haven't even mentioned Richard Dreyfuss as the crusty
and
blue-collar
dad.
And I
super do love still Legally Blonde. So, you know, he kind of gets a pass for everything, I think, after that. There you go.
I think he's maybe wearing out
is
his
Is he wearing out his pass? I don't
know. The Ugly Truth, really, that counterbalances a lot of goodwill.
Do you think, though, he had any control over The Ugly Truth, or do you think Katherine Heigl just, like...
Well, he did 2 movies with her. So
oh, did he?
Yeah, he did Killers, too.
So maybe they're bros.
Or they are simpatico to some level, yeah.
I'm even more fascinated now.
Well, follow him on Twitter.
I'm going to go follow him on Twitter.
I did not follow him back.
I wanted to read my review, because it really is written with a really good heart behind it. Like, I'm trying to drum up box office.
Yeah, nothing like comparing a movie to Antitrust to really rev that BO engine.
I'm trying to help. I'm on the side of goodness here.
Where is Ryan Phillippe these days?
He's on some show. He's on a show. I don't know which one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you mentioned, like, oh yeah, Ryan Phillippe.
Are we done talking about things?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about it? It's Always Fair Weather at all?
We really don't have a lot of time.
Okay.
We're running out of time.
All right, fine.
We saw It's Always Fair Weather yesterday.
Yeah, which I had never seen projected before.
So wonderful.
Saw it in 35 at the New Beverly. It's the third of the three Stanley Donen and Gene Kelly collaborations behind the camera. And it's kind of a dark tone for musicals.
It is. Yeah.
It's about three World War II buddies reuniting 10 years later and discovering they don't really like each other because they don't really like themselves. And it was curated by Edgar Wright, who's doing several weeks' worth of films at the New Beverly that all tie into themes of his new movie, The World's End, which we'll be talking about next week. And this was he showed this in The Big Chill, which was sort of movies about friends reuniting, which is part of what World's End is about.
Sean Abley just texted me.
Uh-huh.
And here's the text. Cake, donut, bread pudding level achieved.
Nice.
I'm pretty excited about
that. Yeah, no, text. He promised that yesterday.
Y'all don't get any of this.
No.
But we do, and we'll report back.
We get cake, donut, bread pudding.
So here's my DVD recommendation.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Taoism Drunkard, which is a Yuen Clan film. Back in the day, our friend David Z presented us with a VHS tape that is nonstop Yuen Clan fights.
That's what the label says, Yuen Clan fights.
Taken out of all these different movies and just pieced together all these fights. Insane, insane fights. Well, Taoism Drunkard is from 1983 or 84 and makes no sense. On any level, like with subtitles, without subtitles, English, Cantonese, we don't know.
English?
Yeah, there is no universe in which this film makes sense. But it's maybe the best movie that's ever been made in the whole world. Here are the fighting things that happen in this movie. And I'm picking this movie because of Kick-Ass 2.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see fighting. You want to see amazing, jaw-dropping fighting. You want to see a thing called a banana monster that looks like a brown Pac-Man or the Tiki Idol in Trilogy of Terror.
The Zuni fetish doll.
Flying, the Zuni fetish, I'm sorry. Flying through the air and fighting a guy. You want to see a guy who fights with tiny little remote-controlled helicopters that explode and turn people's heads into pigs. And you want to see a drunk guy who rolls around in a bamboo wicker pig head. And you want to see people who come out of nowhere to fight with giant weapons that don't make any sense, that actually help them lose the fight that they were in. And there's a fat lady who's dressed as a bee, and her kung fu style is to sit on you.
Okay.
And that's what it's about.
Is this in print on DVD?
It's on YouTube.
Ah.
I think it's on DVD somewhere, too, like some bootleg or whatever.
Ah. If it's not on legit DVD,
it may be on. It may be on legit DVD. If it's not on legit DVD, I know it's on YouTube.
Okay, if I can't find the legit DVD, I will link to it on YouTube, but otherwise...
But Kick-Ass 2 calls for an antidote, and this movie is the antidote.
Fat Bee Lady is the antidote to Kick-Ass 2.
Yes.
My DVD pick this week is Pirates of Silicon Valley, which was a made-for-TNT movie about the Steve Jobs-Bill Gates rivalry, and it will tell you way more about Steve Jobs and about computers and about... why computers matter and what they did for the culture than Jobs ever does. So check that one out.
So we are counterbalancing. We're providing.
Don't watch this.
Curative.
Yes. Anthony Michael Hall plays Bill Gates. Noah Wiley plays Steve Jobs, and it is streaming on Amazon and it's on DVD.
All right. Here's the thing. I have to go make dinner. It's a late afternoon. I'm going to read a letter, just one today. We've got a little backlog, but it's not a lot of backlog.
All right.
But here's one that has been sent to us twice now, and I've lost it two times. So here's the letter. I finally got it from Mifo, King.
Okay. M-E-E-F-O.
Who asked very politely, hey, what happened to my letter? Like twice. And I was like, oh, dude, I'm so sorry. Dave, comma, Alonso. Enormous fan of you both.
Oh, thanks.
And especially of the two of you together. We're like...
the Wonder Twins.
We're like cake, donuts, and bread pudding. Two things that go together. I've tried to leave a review for Linoleum Knife three times on iTunes, but for some reason it never appears. The internet hates you because we keep losing your letter. I don't recall using vulgar language or drawing ASCII penises in the reviews.
ASCII.
ASCII? What's ASCII?
It's a kind of keyboard. It's a when in the old days when people would like very elaborately make drawings on line that were made out of slashes and equals.
Oh, yeah.
ASCII is a type of...
You know. This is how much I know about any of that. I don't recall drawing ASCII penises in the reviews, but I cannot and will not promise anything. I come for the knifing.
Woo!
But before we get to my list, I would like to state that Alonzo panning Looper in a previous episode for Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face makeup, taking him out of the picture, but then subsequently praising Cloud Atlas makes no sense. Thank you, Mifo King. We're bros now.
I gotta be me.
The Wachowskis' use of makeup to disguise or portray its leads as various races and sexes throughout time was laughable at best. Wait a second. And bordered on irresponsible and racist at worst. You know what? We're not friends anymore.
Yeah, no.
See, I love that movie.
I
love Cloud Atlas. And I super double love Looper. Because Alonzo was wrong.
No, never.
I request Alonzo rewatch Looper.
No.
Or concede that Cloud Atlas's crimes are far more severe.
Also, no.
You, sir, must be held to account.
Sorry. Uh-uh. No, I think that in Cloud Atlas...
That was his line, not me.
I know.
You, sir, must be held to account.
In Cloud Atlas, it becomes clear that they are using this ensemble throughout each era of history and each part of the world, and that's part of its intentional thing.
Yes.
The Looper thing is just a weird, dumb idea, and it's distracting, and it's distracting for the entire movie.
You're a weird, dumb
idea. I stand by my opinions. Sorry, Mifo. Glad you like the show, but I'm not backing down on this.
Now on to the list. Nothing too shocking or obscure. Truly, this list changes in my head every day, and sadly, yes, I think about it every day. So here goes. Dr. Strangelove, my all-time number one, practically the only constant in my top 10. Mm-hmm. I had to enforce a strict one film by each director policy on this list, or else about half of the top 10 would be Kubrick.
Understood.
Billy the Kid, 2007 Jennifer Vendetti documentary. The subject of that film is my hero, an inspiration, and I just want him to be okay.
The title rings a bell, but I never saw it.
I never saw it either. So you get a you get a benefit of the doubt on that one. Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. Yes. If I spoke Korean, I would go to camp outside Chan-wook Park's office until he gave me a job on one of his films. More than any other living filmmaker on this list, I just want to see how he works. Brick. About as strong a debut feature as I've seen, conceptually and structurally. I know Alonzo will disagree. Great pacing, pays respect to the genre, even while modernizing it. In the hands of a less capable director, the conceit could easily feel tongue-in-cheek. He's right about that.
No, I got nothing against Brick.
Leon.
The professional.
The professional.
Which I've still never seen.
No words to describe the joy this film gives me. My eyes and ears, my heart and soul thank this movie and everyone involved in its production. No Country for Old Men.
Okay.
One of the few films that I feel improves on the source material, and I'm a huge Cormac McCarthy fan. It's a Western in reverse, whereas typically a hero comes to town, triumphs over evil, and establishes law and order, possibly religion, amidst the lawless, godless Wild West. Here, we start with law and order, evil comes to town, defeats the forces for good and righteousness, and in the end, the gutshot revelation is that there is no God. One of the bleakest endings in film history. How can you not love that?
If you have not seen McCabe and Mrs. Miller, I highly recommend it as far as turning the classic Western structure on its ear.
Working Man's Death, 2005, Michael Glauwager, I'm ruining that last name, documentary, part of his excellent, if occasionally hard to watch, globalization trilogy. I gotta check that out.
I've never heard of him, this movie, or his globalization trilogy.
I did not see that movie. But if you say it's good, it's probably good, because your list is really good so far. Up. This movie has me on a leash.
I assume he means the Pixar and not the Russ Meyer.
Yeah. Yeah. It does things to me I don't want to talk about. Dude, I'm with you. I know you disagree with me, but...
Look, the powerful parts of Up are powerful.
All of it. All of it. The proposition. A more standard Western rehash this time with great atmosphere, music, characters, and violence. Nick Cave has tapped into my brain. I honestly cannot remember what I thought about that film. I know I saw it, and I don't remember a thing.
Guy Pearce,
and I have to go back
it?
And look at what I wrote, if I wrote anything.
That's a movie that I every so often I hear somebody rave about, and it just has not ever... I've never felt compelled to
again,
watch.
The hamster wheel of this job has erased every
right, no.
moment of that from my head.
And it's, you know, I just... On the rare moment that I get to see a movie on my own dime and decide what I want to see...
Like, I'm glad we do this podcast, because now there's an audio record of my opinions about things.
But it's almost never a Western for me, I have to say. So, yes, it's a movie I need to catch up on, but I have not gotten to it.
I may take heat for this, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, but it was the right film for that time in my life. Who am I kidding? It still is. Plus, I think Gondry's judicious use of CGI in service of a narrative is something other filmmakers should study. Honorable mention goes to Drive, which I feel will be on my top 10 one day. I just need to make sure a little time has passed to see how it ages. But I feel it's one of those films where every single element came together perfectly to create this little world and everything in service to the story. Everything was in service of the story. The atmosphere, the attitude, everyone in front of and behind the camera was on the same page. And that seems like a hell of a testament to the director, Refn. I also feel somewhat embarrassed that the list skews so modern and that no films by Peckinpah, Mifo King, you are a nerd. You are a stone cold super nerd. I'm adding that to your letter. And that no films by Peckinpah, Kurosawa, or Cronenberg made the cut. As three of my favorite filmmakers, something's way off there, but I can't divorce myself from any of the films on my list at the moment. Tomorrow, I'm sure at least four of those films will change. Have I mentioned this is a long letter? Final note. I wish I could put Breaking Bad on this list. As the line between TV and film continues to blur, it's pure cinematic vision, and in terms of style, substance, and execution, I feel it bests 90% of the films in wide release since it first aired.
Yeah, I would not argue that.
Final thought. I hate that I feel the need to qualify everything with "I feel" instead of just stating my opinion as absolute truth, which it totally is. Thank you, guys. Knife me. Dude, you got 100%.
Yeah,
Yeah. 100%, because two of the movies we haven't seen.
Right, and I...
And two of the ones that Alonzo's quibbling on, he doesn't hate.
Exactly. I don't share your love for certain films, but I don't have a beef with them either, so... Sure.
100% for the Mifo King.
Yes.
Knife.
King of all Mifos.
You get all the knives.
Now quit bugging us about your letter.
We're done. We're finished.
As always, we thank you for listening, and we suggest that you check out our friends in the podcast universe. I'm going to skip a couple of these, because until they do new episodes, I'm not plugging them. So there. do go to ChristyLemire.com and see what she's got shaken. And yes.
Also, you should go to linoleum-knife.com starting right about now, because we just put up a thing. The very first thing the other day.
We're sort of soft
launching. That was an announcement that this podcast would happen.
Yes. And now that you've heard it, you'll want to go back and read about how it was going to be happening.
There might, yeah.
And maybe there'll be something new by the time you go up. Maybe there'll be
something new by the time you go up. We're kind of soft launching right now.
Yes. After Labor Day, we're going to be out of control.
But stuff, right now, things are going up onto the site.
We're learning as we go. You know.
We are gaining traction.
Yes.
We're taking little steps.
Yes.
But it's happening. It's on. It's there.
If you get if you're a serious XM radio subscriber, check out our friends Matt Atchedy and Gray Drake on Rotten Tomatoes Radio twice a week, and check out the Derek and Romaine Show on Sirius OutQ, where we appear once a month. In the podcast land, we would recommend that you give a listen to Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, the Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free on iTunes.
Also, The Lunch.
Oh, yes.
With James Rocky who was a guest of this show once.
You're right.
He has a podcast called The Lunch, where he eats things. I don't know that they eat.
Does he eat
so
on the mic?
Much on the mic?
Because I know people hate that.
No,
some people get really mad when you eat lunch. Chips during your show.
I never have heard them making chewing noises.
Okay,
so I'm going to assume that eating is not happening on the mic, and if it is, he's editing out the squishy chew noises.
And as long as we're talking about podcasts we listen to, you know, they don't need the plug from us because they are getting write-ups in Entertainment Weekly.
My brother and me is the best thing in the world.
Well, I was going to say the Flophouse podcast.
The Flophouse is really good too. Yeah,
but my brother,
the
my
best
brother and
thing
me.
In the world is my brother and me.
They are pretty hilarious.
They are. They make me cry laughing, those guys. They've got, they're three brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They have the...
The nerdiest,
twerpiest voices of anybody, and they kill me.
They are super funny.
Yeah.
You can leave us a review at iTunes, unless you are MIFO, apparently, in which case you can't, but do try, because
iTunes hates you.
The more positive reviews we get, the more people will check out the show. It's an algorithm or something weird, I don't know. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. You can also stream us using the little widgety thing on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast, and if you haven't liked it already, please do.
Go do it.
If you haven't told your friends to like our Facebook page, please do. In fact, really, if you haven't told your friends about Linoleum Knife, it would be awesome if you did, because we find that's really how our numbers jump. People, word of mouth, people say, hey, check this thing out. So, you know, if you like us, explain to people what you like, and maybe they'll like it too. You should,
when you see this on our Facebook walls, if you're on Facebook too, you should share it on your Facebook wall and tell people that you listen to it and how effervescent we are. What
pleasure we bring to your life.
And then word of mouth us with your words and your mouth to other people who are not on Facebook.
Mouth those words.
Tell them it's very easy to download a podcast.
Yes.
Even a dummy like me can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we get more adoration
and
that
ears.
We deserve.
Yes. You can also follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com. And feel free to drop us a line. We are catching up on our listener mail at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com with your questions, your comments, your top 10 lists, your worst 10 lists, whatever you would like to share. And do check out Linoleum-Knife.com. Slowly but surely, it's becoming a thing.
Next week, there's another giveaway.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Which, if you've been following our Twitter feed, you'll know what we're giving away. But until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
I'm a cheese grater. Goodbye.